You are listening to episode 172 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Everything's getting smarter, and I'm not getting any richer.
Episode 172 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is January the 11th, 2015. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my brother who consumes electronics, James Furlough.
Dude, I love electronics. They taste so good.
Right? They're delicious. So it's CES this week, which is always a good week. It's both easy and hard. It's easy because there's a lot to talk about. It's hard because there's a ton to talk about. Holy cow.
Yeah, seriously. There's just a lot going on. But it's all good, you know?
Yeah, Engadget and TechCrunch were like seriously on one this week. Holy cow, there was a lot of articles.
Yeah. No, it's like, and it's like a sprint / marathon for them. It must be tiring.
Yeah.
I would love to try it.
I know. I'd love to go. Oh man, I'd love to go. But next year, maybe, or the year after, one of these years. But man, okay, I got to tell you this because I'm proud of it and I want to brag. I ran 9 miles today, but this is the thing.
What?
I did it without stopping.
Which is, that's important.
It is. Yeah. It's you know, it's part of the whole thing.
That's very cool. You know, I just signed up for a half marathon today, so that gets me something.
Ooh, when are you signing? That's almost like running 9 miles. When are you running your half marathon?
It's committing to eventually run at least 9 miles.
That's true.
I'm running it in August. It's the Albany half marathon.
Ooh, so that's a,
I don't have
that's
to go anywhere.
Time. Yeah, that's nice. That's a long time from now. You gonna have enough time to train?
Yeah, I might. I will. I mean, we'll have a kid by then, so that'll be. But dude, it was part of my annual goals to run a half marathon, so I was like, well, I better sign up for one.
So. That's a good point. Yeah, mine's a month and a half away, so I'm turning it up a notch, man.
You're on track. It sounds like. That's
good. Yeah, it's what's crazy is this is like, okay, this is the furthest I've ever run in a single setting, which is very, you know, that's kind of cool. Just to think about. But what's really impressive, if I do say so myself, I did it at 9 minutes and 12 seconds a mile on average.
That's a good pace.
That is a good pace. I'm told it's a good pace.
So let's see here. Let me do some quick math just for the fun of it. So 12 divided by 60 is 0.2. So you did it in 9.2 minutes.
What?
And what?
What did I do in 9.2 minutes?
That was your mile.
Oh, I see. I gotcha. Okay, I get it. Sorry.
All right, we're going, what is it? 13.1 miles. That's 100. Oh, you got to get faster.
No, I don't.
Yeah, you do. Because that would put you at 2 hours and 30 seconds.
That's not true.
Yes.
No, because 120 minutes... which would be 2 hours, would be a 10-minute mile per 20 minutes. It would be, okay, I've done the math.
Point one's killing you is what your problem is.
No.
Dude, I just did it.
No. You're thinking about this all wrong. Your math's wrong. I don't know what you did wrong, but your math's wrong, because this is the deal. I run for 12 miles at 10 minutes per mile, it's 120 minutes, right?
Yeah.
So we can work backwards. It'd be really easy. Let's say I'm running a 9-minute mile. You'd take that you take 1 minute per mile off of each one. So it actually subtracts 12 miles. So if I would do 12 miles in, would that extra 10 seconds, 11 seconds bump me over?
And then you got to, well, don't forget
3 minutes.
Add a mile too, to what you just took off.
I guess it would. It would bump me over 2 hours. I'm not going to keep that up for the
whole... like 30 seconds. Literally.
See, the problem is I'm not going to break 2 hours.
There's a lot of data 13 miles, but... What?
I don't mean to be a defeatist, but I'm just not going to do that.
You're right with that attitude.
Yeah, I had an incredibly hard time doing that today at 9 miles and got to the end of the 9 miles and thought, yeah, I could probably crawl another, you know, mile after this, but it's actually not true. My goal is a 10 minute per mile. You know, I want to come well under 2.5 hours.
Well, then you're doing good.
I know I am. That's why I'm excited. But, James, you know what? We're not here to talk about half marathons. This week, like every week, we will be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera. And by that, we mean the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they are developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James got a short disclosure he wants to throw our way.
Yes. I work for the future HP Inc. However, I do not represent the future HP Inc. or any of the future HP Inc.'s opinions.
Or the present ones, right?
Oh, yeah, or the present ones. Yeah, I don't really care about that one. They're not going to stick around. So. Oh,
touche. You can say whatever you want, man.
Yeah, you're going to be fired. I don't think so. I'm going to work for a new company.
I quit.
Probably shouldn't dangle that one out there.
Yeah, right.
Because they still might.
If you want to follow us throughout the week, throughout the day, throughout the months and years, we're always doing stuff. One of the areas you can go, for me, Twitter @MatthewDFurlow. I'm up in the Twitter. Also, the more popular Instagram @NextWiggin4. 2 G's, NEXTWIGGIN, #4. Mm. Check it out.
I am @JamesFurlow on the Twitter, jamesfurlow.com, on the regular web, JamesFurlow pretty much everywhere else.
Nice. Like it.
It is nice.
Also you can go to furloughbros.com and we put a bunch of stuff there. We put links to our YouTube video stuff. We put links to the podcast, but more importantly, we put links to all the articles we talk about, which is really a big service to Engadget and TechCrunch this week. You're welcome, guys. Have fun with it. Just go there if you have any questions about the cool technology we're talking about. This week, there's going to be a ton of them. I feel bad for whoever posts them to our webpage. He's got a lot of copying and pasting to do.
It's going to be tough.
But, yeah, so go and check that out. We don't normally do this, but I figured it would be worth it to bring this up. We actually have a section on our show notes that's called the Social Interaction Bag. For when people we are socially interacted with and we want to bring it up.
It's true. We do have that section.
We were socially interacted.
Section.
we were socially interacted with and I wanted to address that. But my problem is, James, I can't actually find the link that you send me to it. Was it on our website?
Actually, I don't think it was. Wasn't it on About Me?
Is that where it was?
Dude, I don't know.
No.
Tina Marie, right?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah. It's an About Me page. I have no idea where to find it, though.
That's hilarious.
Anyway, so I sent you this email. Want me to forward it to you again, or what do we...
We'll just read it.
All right, so, Tina... She is an avid listener. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
And we gave a predictions podcast, and we were talking about new technology in the home genre. And we mentioned in particular that, I think you mentioned this, that you would like a meat thermometer that could be synced. Why is this thing not big enough? There we go. That would be synced with your home controls, and your oven would turn off automatically when the meat was cooked. That's a good idea. So Tina, being the all-star that she is, did some research and she found one that works with Wi-Fi. And it's called, you can find it. So pretty much like it exists, which is excellent. And you can go to amazingribs.com. That just sounds totally appropriate. And it's called the iCelsius Wireless Barbecue.
So nice.
You can probably just research that as well. Pretty crazy. Pretty crazy.
Yeah, I think she went on to suggest you could, you know, use one of your cool Wi-Fi enabled microcontroller type things and sync those together so that you could cook with your oven. And that's my point in all of this, I guess. And you know, it's like that sort of thing is definitely available from a do-it-yourself perspective and feels like it'd be relatively easy to design and build. And maybe if there's even a space for a startup that has more time than I do. because it's like I sit there and I go, I guess, you know, and it has part to do with the industry that I'm in, that we, you know, we use high temperature, high precision controls to make silicon, you know, wafers, turn them into computer chips, as it were. And so dealing with temperature stuff like this is something that, you know, we focus on a lot. And I sit there and I go, man, I know all the controller stuff. Like, I know how to do this. I know it's possible. Like, it's right there. You could do these, like, they call them cascade control. Is that what we call it? I'm not actually sure if that's just a cool name we came up with or if it's an official term. But the idea is that, do you know anything about control loops, James? Like, and how control loops work?
Let's pretend I don't.
Okay, so basically what happens is if you have a thermometer, and it's like it's with your thermostat's a perfect example. You have a thermometer, and temperature comes on at full temperature, and then the thermometer is trying to get it to hit a certain temperature. And once it goes too hot, it turns off. Once it goes too cold, it turns on. That's a really, really poor one. But you can do more and more stuff with automated systems so that you can actually get it to – you can sense the temperature coming out. You can sense the temperature you're trying to aim at. And based on those two things and a couple other factors and what your goal is, you can actually get it so you hit your temperature perfectly and you just stay there, that what you're going for. And as temperature changes, you can actually do, you know, a PID is a type of control loop that has to do with, it's a PIDs. Cool calculation, yeah. But it's like, it's one of those things where you can, those values that you would use once to do like turkey, you can actually start updating those continuously so that different meats and different, you know, water or whatever, those things are constantly updating so that the oven, if it knows the temperature of the meat that you're trying to get to, and it knows the temperature of the like outside air of the inside of the oven, can actually use those things together to nail the temperature you want in the shortest period of time without burning the outside and doing, like, there's just, oh man, it's just, I feel like it's just right there. It's just right there. Well, you know what you need to do? You need to start with an industrial oven. You need to sell it to chefs first who are still cooking meat. So not, you know, Applebee's, that they're just microwaving it. but something where you sit there and you go, just
nice
shove you
there.
you just shove the thermometer in it, throw the rack of whatever into it, and it just does the rest. And it doesn't care what type of meat it is. It doesn't care how big the meat is or what the water content is or anything. It just does it. And once that technology is established, like the actual how you do that, it's kind of like a toaster oven. Toaster ovens, did you know that there's a specific chip designed for toasters? Like it's a cool little control chip. Everybody uses them. It's just a standard chip. And the only difference between all of the different models is like the quality of the filaments or what kind of a knob do you use. But they all use – they're all controlled by the same controller chip. Once you do that, once you have something like that, which you could very easily do, have like a protocol, and you could make tons of money selling that kind of stuff. I just – come on, CES. Stop making washing machines and make ovens. It's right there. As Tina has pointed out for you. but that does bring us to
to the topic. Really, that concludes our promotion of the iCelsius. And yeah, so CES happened this week, huh?
And then as is normally the case, there's all sorts of cool, awesome new technology that they that companies unveiled. And in some cases, there's some cool, awesome technologies that companies re-unveiled. Looking at you, Oculus. but we'll start out with the future of computer chips, or one of the future of computer chips. So NVIDIA kicked off Monday morning pretty early off with a couple of different new platforms. One is the new 64-bit mobile CPU with a 256-core GPU built into it. This is the Tegra X1. It's their next-generation mobile computer chip. And it's a savage, man.
Well, yeah, it's got 256 core.
Yeah, that's a lot of cores.
Sounds like a lot of cores.
So that is actually a piece of technology that the Maxwell GPU is something they announced last year, but they said, we've done it, but they didn't really put it into anything. So this is the first product that it's being put into. They're also combining that with the 64-bit ARM-based processor, which is, you know, it's not the first Android, quote, compatible 64-bit processor, but the Tegra chip line of chips are a huge consumer brand. The Tegras and the Snapdragons are sort of your two major competitors for high-end smartphones, and this thing's a beast. They showed a bunch of benchmarks of it against the last year's Tegra K1 and Apple's A8 or A8X, which is its best processor. The Tegra K1 and the A8 compete pretty admirably against each other. The Tegra X1 demolished both of them. They literally have a chart, and the Tegra X1 goes off the chart.
It is off the chart. It's a cool little spreadsheet trick.
Yeah. Cool. The Kepler chip in the Shield and Nexus 9 already approach console-level quality, and this new chip, the company said today, surpasses those specs by at least 2x. It also introduces a number of new technologies. The new Maxwell is unquestionably the most powerful GPU we've ever built, the company said. The X1 also far more energy efficient as its predecessor. That's a weird sentence.
Cool.
Yeah, so it's just a really cool. The reason why this is a big deal is because it's clearly becoming a race. You know, the Qualcomm Snapdragons is a very solid chip, but from a high end performance, it's become a race between NVIDIA and Apple. The biggest problem that NVIDIA has is that since Apple is able to, they control all the software, all the rest of the hardware, and everything in between. You know, in their little closed garden, when you compare device to device and not just chip to chip,
Apple system view? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, the Apple technologies tend to out benchmark everybody else just in general and by a big margin. So it'll be very interesting to see what the actual consumer benchmarks are of the X1, although I assume it'll perform quite admirably. It just, the coolest parts about this thing aren't really going to be taken advantage of. That's the biggest concern, is that the 64-bit architecture is not something it's not a big part of the, yeah. So, and 256 cores, what do you even do with that? How do you make that work? I'm sure they've got all sorts of cool technologies that makes it very easy to implement that. But, the end result is a very, very, very cool, very, very powerful chip. They are pushing the bar forward on what that kind of technology looks like. And hopefully in in a couple of years, everybody will be doing something similar. So that's very awesome. But NVIDIA is not a one-trick pony. They also came out with what they said is one of two new car platforms. They are of the belief that the future of automobile technology is twofold. Number one, your car is going to have a lot more screens in it. You talked about this when we after we went to the Tesla store and how cool the big old screen in the Tesla was.
That was cool.
It was cool. It's also computationally intense, which means you need more and more powerful computers in your car. And they are, NVIDIA is of the belief that you're going to, the more screens you have, the more you're going to need even more powerful computers for doing that output. And they want to offer up the solution. So they're introducing the NVIDIA Drive CX, the digital cockpit computer. It has a 16.6 megapixel maximum resolution, which is absurd. and the point of it is that it's designed to really cover. You can have not. It's not necessarily to have like one 4K monitor, but have a bunch of different monitors. Yeah, you could. Yes, you could. You could easily. But it's the whole idea that you're going to have screens on. You know, you can do screens on your columns of your cars. You can have projected screens on your window. You can have obviously your big monitors and your dashboard, and everything's going to have a screen. That's a lot of pixels to drive in. So they're trying to come up with an all-in-one solution. But they also happen to be pretty good at, you know, just as good as they are at pumping out pixels, they're good at looking at pixels. So they're also introducing NVIDIA Drive PX, the autopilot car computer. So obviously, one of the big trends in car technology, and we talked about this a lot, is autopilot and being able to do that. And that's a computationally intense process. It requires really powerful computers to be looking at a bunch of cameras and sensing a bunch of different stuff. And once again, they want to build the platform for that. So they've built a dedicated computer, and it's capable of 2.3 teraflops. Teraflops. It's a mobile supercomputer. And
because it's on wheels. Cool.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, and NVIDIA, I think has a, I think they have an exciting future because that's, it's something that, you know, is really important to have these really robust, powerful computer platforms that are, and it's not really something that the cross section where automobiles and computers meet each other is not something where there's necessarily a computer company. There's not a company that's good at that really yet, you know, right. Ford and GM and Toyota, they're able to do computers, but that's not their expertise. And so there's a lot of even though they tend to be very robust computers, they're not computationally powerful. And then on the other side, you've got like the Intels of the world, which are capable of monstrous computational feats, but they're not designed for cars. They're designed for consumer goods. Yeah. And as the joke always goes, you know, I don't want my car crashing and getting a blue screen of death right before I get my actual death. And so being able to build those systems is something that NVIDIA is, there's not really a company that's any better posed than they are. And it's fun to see them moving in. But
it's interesting, too, that they're going for specific things. You know, they say, hey, we got a chip here for mobile phones. We've got a chip here for displays in the car. We've got a chip here for driving. You know, they're decidedly not following the Intel all-in-one kind of like, we're just going to make the best powerful thing and you can use it for anything. Which means, you know, there's some things that it's good at and a lot of things where you're like, eh, it's okay. But they're very much getting very specific, which is, I think that's okay. As long as they don't get stretched too thin.
Yeah. That's cool. I mean, it's a bold move, and it's worked for them in the past, so hopefully it continues to work out for them.
Yeah.
Up next, though, so in your car, you got these, like, you got this, all this computational power to throw images all over the place, but, you know, there's not a lot of, like, large, square, rectangular surfaces in your car. So how do we deal with that? Well, Sharp, I think, is about to make a lot of money because they have a solution to our problem. They're using low-powered IGBTs. Yeah, IGZO displays that do not need edges. So one of the problems with traditional LEDs is that you just need weird borders, and so building custom shapes is very difficult. It's one of the reasons why the Moto Moto 360 watch has, it's a circular watch face, but the bottom of it is kind of cut off, cropped, and it has to do with how they actually connect to it. Well, Sharp has been working on a screen that doesn't require that. There's no bezel, as it were. And one of the huge advantages of that is that they can cut pretty much any shape out of it. So they have a couple of examples that are very cool, that they start with your circular screens, perfectly circular, you know, stuff that looks really good and very cool. But then they also show a custom cutout screen that has circles cut out of it. And their focus is really on automobile applications, because cars, you know, have a high, there's a big focus on building these really custom contoured, cool looking things. And so implementing screens into cars has been difficult for that reason. And Sharp's got the solution.
Wow.
And yeah. And if this is a well patented solution, it's going to be a very profitable solution, I see. Because cars are just where it starts. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, anywhere where we need custom made screens, if they're able to do that, it really opens up opportunities in smartwatches, wearables, you know, just construction, all sorts of places. Oh, this is exciting. I like to see this sort of stuff.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. I mean, clearly, I think like you said, and I think it's worth underscoring again, cars are becoming smarter and smarter. And we're, I don't think we've hit that tipping point yet. But you can see it now, and you're going by 2020. Definitely, we may get lucky and get it earlier. But you know, there's enough components that are starting to come together. But you know, and the reason why I go 2020 is I go development cycle for a car is 3 years minimum, and they're just starting to come out with this stuff and you know start to show it, which means. If we're seeing it, they've already been talking to the car manufacturers for a year or two, no doubt about that. But they're still like, you know, it's just going to start. I don't know. It's cool. It's cool. Seeing some of those screens like, oh, very fancy, very neat.
Yeah.
You know, what they really need to do is throughout all of this, you know, keep talking with Apple and Google about integrating their car stuff so that they're keeping with the phones and systems we have on hand. Or in our pockets.
Yeah.
But that's cool. I like it, man. That's cool.
It is very cool.
Dude, we got to go to CES. We got to do
it. I know.
So I can see this stuff. We really do. And I can touch it and play with it.
So,
what are you doing next January? What are you doing a year from now? Let's just commit now.
Okay.
Publicly. I'm just kidding. I'm not going to do that.
Oh. Well, that's a, you know.
What about, what are you doing next year? 17. FY 2017. Let's talk.
Well, that's harder to predict, James. I mean, I tend to keep my predictions to 1 year at a time. I would like to say yes for sure. I will happily put it on my calendar as a let's do it. But you know, we'll see where we're at. Let's put it on our calendar. You know what? Let's put it on our calendar. You can't. You know, why not? I'll be 30. And 30 and flirty, or maybe
you've
not.
You've never
flirty.
Been to Vegas before, right?
What?
Sorry, you've never been to Vegas before.
I have when I was sub 21.
Oh, yeah, you went with. Are you talking about when we went as a family?
Yeah.
Okay, that's right. Which was a fun trip, by the way.
It was.
It's still just as fun, even if you don't go gambling. But, anyways.
Well, that's good, because I despise gambling because I'm capable of math.
So, fun story. Let's see if I can do this generally. I know of a guy who owns a house that is amazing. We're talking ginormous house with... You know, he has his own. He had a gym in his house. He had two full,
that's a nice house.
Like, full kitchens. One in the main house, one in the garage. You could easily park a motorhome inside this garage. You could park. No, it wasn't a motorhome. It was like you'd get a full on charter bus inside
holy
this
cow.
Garage. Because he wanted to be able to work on him or something. I don't know. had a white sand beach type of thing. I mean, we're talking nice house. You know, it's clearly in the 10 to 20,000 square foot range here. Anyways, just to give you an idea of how well he did. This guy's profession, he wrote algorithms for slot machines.
He made the slot machines, or he made algorithms that let him
beat slot
machines?
He wrote the algorithms that he then licensed to Vegas machine makers. He literally just came up with equations all day and patented them and then sold them. That was what he did.
Remarkable.
Just to tell you, there's the kind of money that is in making you think like you're going to win when you're actually not going to.
And it's amazing. It is amazing. I know some really, really smart people. I mean, really smart people. Like, I am going to be as general as possible in this because these people might listen, who are convinced they're winning. Like, maybe convinced. And I shrug my shoulders and I go, there's just no way. There's just no way. You don't win forever. You might win once, but that the whole point is, you know, it's a law of large numbers. It's the whole goal is to get you to play and feel like you're winning 49% of the time. That's the goal.
Yeah, and you go and you look at the buildings and the architecture and the shows and everything, and you sit there and say, clearly the house is winning.
Yeah, they're giving away the alcohol. They're giving away this hotel room to you. That's not because it's free. You don't – it doesn't make any sense. And you know what? You know what it is. I've realized what it. I figured out how they do how you justify it, how you wrap around your mind. You figured out how to win. This is the thought. It's not that you lose 40, you win 49% of the time, and you lose 51% of the time, and they end up making money. It's that 49% of the people are winners, and 51% of the people are losers. And you're part of the 49%. You're the one who figured out how to win, or you've got the right patience, or you got the right system. You're like, that's just not how it works. But, you know, poker and single deck blackjack. Those are the only two games where you can even begin to argue. And one of the big announcements early on in the week that I didn't link the article to was a bunch of computer programmers figured out how to never lose poker, one-on-one poker. It's a little complicated. It's a small subset of things that you can actually win with, but it's the sort of thing where you could actually create a gambling. You could create an online, you know, poker thing with multiple players, all played by the computer. Yeah, and since the computer knows if the player doesn't realize he's playing against a single computer, will never win and played. And the trick is that it could be. The whole thing could be governed by a third computer. So it could be a totally legit online poker system that you could never beat because
it's playing by the rules. Playing against the computer. It's just playing them perfectly.
Yeah, there's another computer that you're playing against, which is terrifying.
Interesting.
But you know what that has? It doesn't have. Yeah, it's not the point, James. Okay. Vegas is awesome, but let's not talk about Vegas for right now. Let's talk about the creator of. Who arguably really re-kickstarted the whole drone thing. And they've decided, along with really cool drones, that they also want to get into gardening. So Parrot has come up with an automated watering pot. Part of your whole...
That sounds different.
Yes. It's just kind of what everybody's response was. Okay. Sure. but they're... It's kind of... To them, it makes sense. It's part of that whole Wi-Fi connected, you know, automated stuff. And it's something that they... It fits within the bellhorn of the technology that they're good at developing. It's a pretty wide open field. Nobody's really there. And so they figured, yeah, we'll get into it. They have a robotic plant potter that holds 2 liters of water and 2 liters of soil. The H2O is essentially the same tool. It's another device. But instead of holding your water in a large pot, you plug in a bottle of water into it. Every 15 minutes, the pot and the H2O measure the soil moisture, fertilize, and ambient temperature and light. Based on this data, the gadgets can then water your plants. So pretty cool. I just, you know, they're expanding as a company to become more diverse in what sort of cool technology they come out with. And one of the big trends I'm seeing this year is sort of that finding more niche solutions to your quote smart automated house. And this is part of it, you know, fixing it so that your plants don't die. I appreciate this technology. As somebody who has killed every plant he's ever received, not intentionally and against my greatest efforts sometimes. I've been given those, like those moisture plants that literally never die under any conditions. Like they're super robust and I've killed them. It's wow, rough, man.
Good job.
So I need this. I need it bad.
That's kind of cool, I guess. I'm not really a houseplant person, but...
That's all right. Well, I got one that I think will tickle you. So in the same bellhorn of this, there are dudes... You don't have a lot of houseplants, but you have a big old fish tank, yeah?
Not anymore?
Oh.
Sorry.
It didn't make it?
Dude, we downsized our house. Gotta make choices.
Okay, I have a horrifying question. Okay. What'd you do with the fish? Did you eat them?
Barbecue, actually. Yeah.
Nice.
No, since we knew we were going to be moving, you know, eventually in like that year, we just stopped getting new fish. So as they all died off, that last one was pretty lonely, I suppose.
Probably. Well, that's why it died. Broken heart. So, it's a good thing you didn't have this device because part of the whole switch to a smarter house, smarter you. Fishbit monitors your aquarium health to cut down on floaters. So these guys have come up with a sensor that you drop into your... drop into your aquarium, and it's got all sorts of sensors in there that allow you to monitor your tank ecosystem with the user providing info about the tank capacity, fish makeup, and more. Real-time notifications alert the tank owner to problems, and the app allows them to actually take action via the connected power strip to turn on the lights and activate other devices to respond to and address those issues.
Does it work for saltwater tanks?
It doesn't, I don't know. I'm
assuming.
That's
pretty cool, actually. That's very useful. Saltwater tanks are very fickle. And so if you can get better real-time information on it, that's super powerful. You know, freshwater is not as important, but, that's cool.
It's funny. This article does not actually mention, saltwater in it at all, but it does in its tag. It says, Fishbit makes owning saltwater aquariums easy. That's their whole goal. Makes for a more healthy fish tank. And the other thing with fish, saltwater fish tanks, is you can get the more exotic, expensive fish. So that really becomes a...
That's why you put up with the difficulty of a saltwater tank.
Exactly.
Because the fish are awesome.
So moving on, at least temporarily, from your smart home sort of world and making a brief foray into virtual reality.
Virtual reality.
I don't know. I see real text, 720 degree Alley camera can stream virtual reality. So they came up with all these really cool cameras. Actually, Alley Pro looks pretty. They were one of the companies that made me go, oh, I wish I had a lot more money. They've come up with these like 8x zoom pan abilities, connect your Wi-Fi or cable networks, just sort of your general like, security cameras. Yeah, they just look awesome.
$3,000 for the Alley Pro?
Well, but, you know, this it's sounds like it's elegant. Worth it.
It'll match your interior decor.
Yeah.
All right. So why is this thing worth $3,000 again?
Well, this one's... Okay, that one's pretty cool because it's 8x zoom, pan abilities, connects to your Wi-Fi cable network, and can be watched online or from a mobile device. Gyroscopic control on your mobile lets you move your device around to control the angle. In addition to the option to swipe for navigation, they capture up to 2 hours of footage in an internal SD card, but can record to the cloud for much longer time periods. The two 13-megapixel cameras aren't going to produce perfect TV quality 720-degree video. But the Alley does a remarkable job for its price point. It doesn't hurt that IC Realtek is an offshoot of IC Realtime, the security company that's been making cameras since 2006. This is kind of cool in that whole like VR world that we're moving forward. You know, the big question of how do you actually do VR? Like, how do you film it? What's that going to look like? We've talked about Samsung solution, but this is something that came up again and again. And I thought this is the coolest entry from Las Vegas, about how to do that, how to build those types of cameras. And, I'm excited about it. Also, Nest decided to make an announcement on Wednesday. Were they actually at CES, or did they just announce on?
I don't know.
It's not a very googly thing to do to show up to CES anymore. They think they're as cool as Apple and steer clear. But I'm very glad to see this. Nest, as becoming the center of your smart home, is now teaming up with a couple of other companies, including Philips Hue.
Stuff. That's cool.
It's really cool. This is, and it's
funny.
What's
it going to do? So when you turn off the lights, it turns off the thermostat or turns it down?
I think it's part of that, but one of the big examples, and this is great. So when the Nest detects smoke or CO2, it can dial a local emergency service through UMA, while the Philips Hue light bulbs will flash different colors. So let's say you're asleep, it's like 3 o'clock in the morning, and the fire starts, and the Nest realizes it's going off. It starts to alarm, but you know, you're a heavy sleeper, you got your earplugs in. All of a sudden, your lights in your entire house light up automatically, no questions asked. Awesome. And, you know, and it can flash patterns to let you know, hey, you know, whatever you want. That's one of your big stuff. But more importantly, just sort of your whole general purpose connected stuff where when you do this, this happens. That if this, then that has like really focused on as being your solution to that. Well, now all of a sudden you can do those sorts of interactions without if this, then that. Pretty cool. I think my personal opinion.
That is cool. That's a good sign for Philips because, the Wink is looking more and more appetizing over time.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Yeah. And Philips, the Hue has been left a little bit out in the cold with all these smart hubs, and which is painful for me. Makes me want to get a Nest though.
yeah. I saw they're going to work with automatic, which is something that I want to get for my car, which would be pretty cool. I did notice that Locatron was not on the list, but that's not a big deal because I don't have one yet. So whatever.
You're going to have to move on pretty soon here, man.
Yeah, I am, aren't I? I am. I just am. You know, it's funny. I was looking at my door the other day, too, and there's some little frilly things where I'm like, oh, it's totally not going to fit. I can already tell. And it's just going to bug me.
Oh, yeah, that's yeah, that will drive you crazy.
I can see it coming. Anyways, cool, man. Nest works with it.
So this week, this year was like the first year in 3 years that I didn't predict some sort of a revolution in batteries or wireless power. And I think I'm going to have to go to the record of my 2015 predictions to get an official ruling on this. But looks like first time I decided, nah, we're going to wait another year for a big old revolution. And thanks a lot, CES. Really awesome. Loving this. A wireless transmitter that works from 20 feet away is announced.
Nice.
It's so up to this point, wireless transmission has been pretty much relegated to a pad that you put your phone on. And the big problem with that, and one of the reasons that it's Apple has stayed away from it, is because when you charge your iPhone, you have to plug it in. But if you have a 3-foot cable, you have a 3-foot radius that you can move the phone around in. But if you have a pad, most pads need very, very close, proximity in order to couple. And all of a sudden, it's actually less mobile, even though it's quicker, to be able to pick your phone up and do stuff with it. And so what everybody's been looking and hoping for is a better solution that allows you to get further away, and WhatApp is the solution. It works using a mix of RF, Bluetooth, and a lot of patent-pending technology. The transmitter is where most of the magic happens. It communicates with the local compatible. It communicates with and locates compatible devices using low-energy Bluetooth. Once they've established contact with a device, they send out focused RF signals on the same bandwidth as Wi-Fi, that are then absorbed and converted into DC power by a tiny chip embedded in the device. These transmitters can be built into household appliances, TVs, speakers, and standalone, quote, energy routers. This is pretty well demonstrated technology over the last decade, this whole long-distance coupling stuff. It sounds like their big innovation is, instead of just dumping RF energy into the environment and having transmitters pick it up, they're actually using some directional transmission so that they can use less energy and get a more focused beam. So the good news about that is, if the transmitter's on one side of your head and your phone's on the other side of your head while you're sleeping, you'll probably get a lot of cancer. Or that's what we'll be told will happen.
Yeah.
But it's using standard Wi-Fi bandwidth, so it's easier to deal with the FTC at that that level, because it's less regulated. Sounds really cool.
Wow.
I think
2016, huh?
Yeah, that's going to be my saving. That's going to be what's going to save me in my 2015 predictions, is that it might not actually happen this year. Might be early, might be 2016 when we first see it. Definitely means Apple's not going to get on that game. Thank goodness, because then I would feel like a real moron. But kind of along those lines, up to this point, when this all first started, there's a billion different ways to implement similar technologies. So they all kind of work on very similar principles of using resonating magnetic fields resonating magnetic fields, whether that be typical radio frequencies or just strong magnetic coupling, which is where they actually put two magnets right next to each other and a fluctuating field is transmitted. The thing is that you can use different resistance and different frequencies and different all sorts of stuff. So you can very easily make a power station that doesn't work with anybody else. If you're trying to create your own, like let's say you're Apple and you don't want it to work with anybody else, you can make a very specific solution. But these companies that are developing this technology, they're like totally the transmitters. They hate that because they don't want you to buy a separate transmitter for every device. They want you to buy one transmitter to work with everything. So over the years, we've sort of focused down into three different competing, major, protocols that will hopefully allow more devices to work on fewer charges. And as of this week, we have gone from 3 to 2. The Power Matters Alliance and the Alliance for Wireless Power have just made signed a letter of intent to merge on the dotted line. The merger will, which will operate under a new name, will be finalized mid-2015, and the two groups hope it can give the technology a boost. The deal is they're coming together because they were number 2 and 3. And from an actual, like, how many different companies are involved and how big their influence is, they, as number 2 and 3, will still be smaller than number 1. Which is not a good sign. But they do have some pretty big dogs behind them. Qualcomm is one of the big ones, and they are a major heavyweight in mobile chip manufacturing and stuff. So there's definitely going to be more struggle as we go forward. But it sounds like we're down to two major standards, which, you know, is marketable. You could theoretically have devices, you know, before you could actually do that. Consumers will put up with that kind of garbage. And so it's very exciting. Very.
Yeah, that's super cool. Oh. That looks powerful.
Also, your neck of the woods, James, HP, I think actually had,
they were there.
I think they win the award for most exciting of the most boring technology.
Boom. That's how we roll.
It's a good category to win.
It's a profitable category to win.
There we go. So monitors are a big thing. TV screens, quantum dot technology, 8K, 4K, curved screens, like everybody and their mothers had something
out
there.
Did you say 8K?
Giant stuff. I mean, it was out of control, and everybody talked about how beautiful everything looked, and it sounds really cool. But HP, I think, came out with, in my personal opinion, and this isn't just me being biased because you work for HP. You know me. I would never vote for HP just because you work for them.
I noticed that.
But they came out with a curved monitor. It's a 27-inch and a 34-inch version, which will be available for business users, too, under different names. The 34-incher, the NV34C, come out at $1,000, and it has a 3,440 by 1,440 resolution and a wide 21:9 aspect ratio. But they really took it forward with their flat normal screens because if you wanted a 5K monitor but you didn't want to buy an iMac, they've come up with a solution, and they're coming out with a 5K monitor. It sounds pretty cool. It's expensive, as one might guess.
Picture in picture. Yeah, there's no price on those 5 and 4Ks, huh? No, the 4K panel comes, let's see, the 27-inch is $750.
No, wait. Sorry, the Z27Q is $1,300 bucks.
Just say it on there? I'm blind. Oh, there it is. Yeah.
The very last number.
Very last number. Wow.
But in my humble opinion, because I'm a VR dork, I actually think that's the least impressive of HP's monitors that they unveiled this week. Oh, okay. The one I am most excited about is, and if I had money and any skill, I would get one, is the, what's the name? Doesn't matter. It's a stupid name, undoubtedly. That is one thing y'all need to work on.
Reality display?
Yes, the ZVR. It's a 23.6 inch.
It's a VCR, full HD, but different.
Exactly. It's a full HD monitor with three-dimensional display that requires passive 3D glasses.
Huh.
Basically what it is, it's three different technologies coming together. There's the stylus that it can track in space. There are four cameras that can track your face in space. And then there's a pair of passive glasses that you wear. And what's able to happen, you know, we've talked about this on the show before, but we'll cover it again briefly. When it comes to our ability to sense depth, there's actually two different things that go on. There's one, it's the bifocal picture. It's, you got two eyes, you got two different images from two different angles, and that allows you to get a sense of depth. But there's actually a almost more important effect that we're able to do, which is the parallax effect. So when you move your head back and forth, you can see things, see behind objects. And that, right. that is really instrumental in the ability to see things and to see depth and whatnot. Well, HP is finally, this is like the first consumer product that really is putting all those technologies together. And basically what they're saying is you look at the monitor, you put the glasses on, and an object will pop out at you. You'll be able to get the sense of depth because it's popping out at you, but because they can do head tracking, they'll change the image so it looks as though you're looking to the side of this holographically projected object. And let's say you want to manipulate it. They're using the tried and true stylus in midair method. So you can like poke it or like grab it with a, you know, use a button and grab it and move around the object. And it actually sounds to me like it's a really solid solution to holographic stuff. It's something that people have been saying, we can do this. Because nobody's ever actually built something that can do it. It's they're saying that it's going to be probably going to have some really, really specific use cases, software. So you might, they're selling it to classrooms, scientists, designers, and stuff like that. But it's really cool. I'm actually, I want one.
Wow.
I just don't know. Like I said, I can't afford it and I don't know what I would do with it, but I would totally get it if I could answer either or both of those questions. So yeah. So I'm totally off the Steam Machine bandwagon, BT Dubs.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know what's going on with the Steam Machine. But all of the hardware of the past couple of years is coming back. These little small computers, Mac Mini competitors that are designed specifically for gaming, but they're not coming with the Steam Machine software anymore. They're coming, they're saying, yeah, it's Steam Machine compatible. You can do it when you want to get there, but the hardware manufacturers seem to be off that bandwagon. And I don't know if they're just keeping their powder dry, but I get the feeling that they've decided it's not the horse that they want to bet on, which is a bummer because it seemed like
because Valve made all these promises and then went, never mind, we can't quite deliver on it yet.
Yeah, pretty much. So, oh well, better luck next time. Turns out I made the right purchase with my gaming stuff. talk a little bit about old consumer electronic stuff. Canon, they're adding Wi-Fi to all their cameras.
They still make cameras?
Right. It's kind of what everybody's asking. And like, really? We're doing this? Okay. There are some really, really, really cool solutions out there, for adding Wi-Fi to your cameras and just embedding it in your SD card. But Canon has decided that it's worth the extra 12 cents that the chip will cost to just put it in directly. So you can, you know, use your really high-end DSLR, take beautiful, wonderful pictures with your enormous lenses, and then Wi-Fi it over to your iPhone so you can instantly publish it to Instagram.
I guess that's cool.
Yeah, to me, it's one of those things where it's like, it's yeah, you have to. Like, it just, you know, and there will probably always be a market for super crazy high-end cameras that are better than your phones, unless some new optical technology comes out in the next decade, you know, preventing a true optical game changer, as it were.
I don't see that happening.
Yeah, from a physics perspective, it seems difficult. Anything that can make your iPhone that dramatically better.
Yeah, I'm with you. Keep going.
Yeah, but, you know, so add Wi-Fi. Allow you to do ad hoc networks. Very cool.
Get it to your phone easier. Helps you stay relevant. Maybe not to Instagram, but, you know, to go to your iPad to do some editing real quick. Okay. I get it. It's an easy win. And I feel like you're gone. Oh, well. Poor Matthew. Well, looks like I'm experiencing some technical difficulties here. I just totally went off the air because of a server error. But no big deal. We're just going to keep rolling while I text Matthew and tell him you're gone. See what he says. Hopefully he'll come back at some point in time. In the meantime, this is a great opportunity for a mini commercial break. He thinks I'm gone. I'm not gone. I don't know who's gone. Since we're in the middle, this is a good time for a commercial break. I just want to tell you about furloughbros.com/store, where you can go and check out our store. We've got hats and shirts and mugs. I think that's about it. I should probably check real quick here. But all you do is you go to furloughbros.com/store. That's it. And that will magically whisk you off. Yeah, we've got just regular t-shirts. We've got long sleeve shirts. We've got a nice polo shirt there. Some mugs, pretty cool. A frosted glass beer mug. Oh, boom, that's right. Highly check it out. And, if you want to let everyone know that you're a Furlough Bros Tech Podcast listener, that's one way that you can make that happen. It's pretty cool. Let's see what he says. Try rejoining. Man, gotta love the live stuff. Let's see what happens here. If we can get him back or not. Otherwise, we'll just kind of keep rolling here. Pretty crazy, like, just a ton of stuff going on in CES this last week. Let's see, he is, but he's not allowed to. Well, I'll tell you what, let's try adding a name, Matthew Dean Furlough. We'll try inviting him, see if that works out for him. We'll just text him, sent, and invite. All right. I see his picture. Always a good sign. And, hey, are you back?
I'm back.
All right. Cool. So you were talking about something. Let's see. Audi's self-driving car?
Oh, I was going to skip that one. Audi's car drove itself to Las Vegas, which is cool. Other people are doing it, not just Google. And it was in Vegas, so they were legally allowed to, which was nice. Cool. In Nevada. So this is kind of a cool one. There's I think will be useful for you in the next couple of months. So Intel has helped put together a smart pacifier. It tracks your babies and their fevers. So, this to me just sounds like awesome technology. You got a pacifier, your babies go crazy for it. If they don't have it and you lose it, they lose their mind, or so I'm told. Also, the ability to track temperatures and stuff on a relatively continuous basis is nice. So they've come up with embedded technology. It's a pacifier with a temperature sensor and Bluetooth. If the pacifier moves out of the 30-meter range, the pacifier app will make a note of the last known location using the phone's GPS, pointing in the direction of your lost child or, hopefully, just a lost pacifier. And if you do misplace the thing, you can trigger a miniature siren that's built into help you track it down. It's hermetically sealed, and it only costs $40. So Sounds awesome. It's got to be greenlit by a bunch of regional regulators, but you know, it's a very, very cool idea. And to me, man, this is the part. This is where like smart tracking really, or you know, the health tracking and that sort of smart technology and wearables really can, you know, can find its first huge foothold. And you get a couple of these smart pacifiers so you can charge them as you go. And all of a sudden you get these really powerful tools for tracking your baby and everything. This is awesome.
Yeah, that's very cool. I'm not going to get one, but it's cool.
Come on. It's only 40 bucks.
Yeah,
I got it. Hey, James. Baby shower.
Baby shower. Brilliant. I would totally accept one as a baby shower.
Oh, heck yeah.
That's cool. So I'm gonna stop you for a little bit here. We're going to take a timeout on CES.
Okay.
We're going to talk about social media. Because it turns out a teenager wrote a little post on Medium saying, here's how I view social media. So we'll go fairly quickly because we could, in theory, spend an entire hour on this, but we won't. So he talks about a whole bunch of different things and how they use them. He essentially says for Facebook, everyone is right. It is dead to teenagers, essentially. He goes, we have to be on it because everyone's on it. And but that's about it. He did say, though, that they do like Messenger and Facebook groups, which I'm like, all right, you're on Facebook, whatever.
Yeah. And I bet they like Instagram also.
Loves Instagram. That is by far the most used social media outlet for their age group.
Yeah.
Which I'm like,
totally don't like Facebook. Gosh, people are so stupid.
Yeah, so, yeah. Well, he's a teenager. What do you expect?
Touche.
Let's hear. Twitter, he says, to be honest, a lot of us simply do not understand the point of Twitter. There's always a core group of school, which I thought this was interesting. And this is true of Pinterest, too, where he's like, I don't get Pinterest. And one of the people, they were like, well, yeah, because it's not your life stage. You don't care about news. And so you're not interested in Twitter because it's primarily a news finding thing. And you don't care about Pinterest because it's about decor and decorating. And yeah, you're probably not into decorating when you're in high school.
Sort of like, I'll bet he doesn't get what AM radio is all about either. You know, like,
yeah,
seriously?
Probably. You'll love this one. Snapchat is quickly becoming the most used social media network, especially with the advent of My Story. Snapchat, oh my gosh, I cannot say their name. Snapchat is where we can really be ourselves while being attached to our social identity because their parents are not on it. They'll say stuff like if we were going to a party, the use case would be they'd have a Snapchat getting ready for the party. They'd have one at the party. Maybe a couple at the party, and then they'd have one like post-party, they said. And then for Instagram and Facebook, well, they say for Facebook, they would post a couple, you know, friend posing types of pictures, and then Instagram would get like the best one of the group, would be the one that you end up posting. I thought it was interesting that Tumblr, he goes, you know, it's a nice place to follow and to be followed with like-minded people, so it's not dead. That's good news for Yahoo. Cool. he did mention Yik Yak. He did say, though, that it does have this one downside where it goes quiet during the holidays because it's based on location dependence. Mm. And I'm like, yeah, that could be true. It's different when you get a job, bud, because no one goes home. But it's got to survive that long. And then he did like Medium because of its recommendation feature, I guess. But anyways, just kind of, it was an interesting story. We'll obviously have the entire post.
It's for you to look at. It's funny. This is what the most interesting thing to me about that to me is how he described using Instagram, Facebook, and Snapchat, I would say is precisely how I use it. I don't use Instagram because, or I don't use Snapchat because much because I think it's stupid, but I recognize that that's how my friends use it. And if I didn't have a problem with the personalities involved, I would use it. But like that whole idea of Instagram gets my best picture of the night. Facebook gets my photo album from the night. Well, yeah, that's like, it's funny that he's like, that he sits there very, you know, and I think a lot of people think this is really interesting. Like, oh, how are people using it? Like, it just kind of makes sense. Like, Instagram is not designed for albums. So you pick the best picture because you don't want to be the spammer and spam all your friends with all your followers with 1,000 photos. You only get the best photo.
He did also say, though, that if he doesn't get any likes within 15 minutes of posting a picture, he takes it down.
Whoa. See, now that is a teenager. that's funny. Oh, man.
Like, man, you're so vain. You're a teenager.
The narcissism of youth. At least they know they're not populator. Popular, that's the important part.
yeah, no guessing.
Exactly. But it's a fascinating dilemma. I don't think Facebook has any problem with the position that they're taking, that they are a utility that you must engage with and that you're using their other services more. Like, oh no, that's the worst. I still think that there's space, man. There's space for Snapchat to get beat by Snapchat as long as there's not a real viable alternative. They're in trouble, but deletable photos in standard messaging apps like iMessenger and iMessages is just going to end everything that Snapchat brings to the table. And I think it's at this point, Facebook and Apple don't see them as a major threat. Actually, Apple probably won't do it just because they realize that that's a pull to their ecosystem. But
you know what I would love to see happen is to watch them get bought and shut down. You know, like just Google to buy them. Like, yeah, we're not going to touch them, and then just shut them down a year later. And you know, integrated into their own thing, doing their own whatever. But like, yeah. Snapchat as an entity ceases to exist. I'd be okay with that. That's an acceptable outcome.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah. Anyways, let's go back to
moving
what we were
on back
about.
To CES.
I can be mad about Snapchat any day of the week.
That's true.
So this one was kind of a cool idea. Have you heard of Sling TV?
I've heard of the Sling Box. Is that the same thing?
I don't know. I don't think so.
So the Sling Box is where you could record something on your DVR and then watch it anywhere in the world.
Right.
On your computer. Over Wi-Fi or whatever.
And this is kind of the same principle, but without the saving it to your DVR. It's a $20 a month service that will stream live TV to any one of your devices over standard internet connections. It's being brought to you by Dish. But the biggest deal about this is that it's live TV of channels like ESPN.
Oh, that's huge.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's pretty much
that's
all
a game changer.
Jimmy said. It's a cable-less Wi-Fi digital distribution, you know, network for
20 bucks a month. Wait. Just to clarify here. Do you have to have cable in order to then get this?
Nope.
So it's Dish. I don't know, or whatever. I don't know what is Dish. Satellite.
Yeah,
I guess what I'm trying to say is this: 20 bucks on top of your normal. Nope. Dish plan.
Nope.
They're just, you know, whatever.
Yep.
We'll just give it to you for 20 bucks.
You want ESPN? You get it. 20 bucks a month. No strings attached. Works on all your devices.
So if I'm reading this correctly, right, they made a deal with Disney, correct? And that's...
I think so.
And because I think I was reading or I heard somewhere... Oh, I'm trying to remember now. It was a long week. That they got a whole bunch of the Disney Channel stuff as well. And that maybe not Disney Channel itself, but a whole bunch of other Disney properties, and ESPN happens to be one of them. Interesting. So 20 bucks gets you ESPN. Wow.
Obviously, yeah,
it doesn't work on the Apple TV.
So the
yet,
big.
But it
so
will.
The one of the big shortcomings of this is that it, you know, what are your catches? Number one, only works on one device at a time. Which, okay, how long will that last before they open it up and you can do four devices and for a couple extra bucks a month? Doing it on your TV, you're gonna actually need like a TV, like a smart TV or a smart TV box, like your Amazon Fire TV, your Roku, your Xbox One, for examples. But it doesn't work on your Apple TV, which is starting to drive me crazy. Apple,
yet,
like, it's time. Get on the bandwagon. This is happening. Just go with it. So, yeah, the full list of channels and stuff is also a big question, but it's happening, man. The cable cutters unite, as it were. I still think that it's not the perfect solution because what we really want is an a la carte, you know, order as you want it solution, but it's a big first step in that direction and might be the pattern for the next couple of years to come. So that's cool.
Wow. I mean, it's clearly headed in this direction, and mm-hmm. you knew someone was going to make a move, and it makes sense that Dish would do it, especially with that whole Comcast Time Warner potential merger thing going on. They're like, we got to do something to shake it up. Otherwise we're just going to slowly lose.
Mm-hmm.
And this is that, I mean, they're doing the T-Mobile for the cable industry or, you know,
heck yeah,
for the TV industry.
They won the best of CES with this product, BT Dubs. Spoiler alert. This was considered the coolest thing that was wow. demoed this year. Yeah, and I think it's partly because
not
it
because
launches...
It's not because it's the coolest. It's because it's the most wanted.
Well, it's the most wanted. It's actually the service that people are hoping it was, and it's going to start... You know, you can get it like by the end of January. So it's actually this year. I mean, it's got a lot of, as far as just like practical, real, like this is happening. it's huge. It's a really big deal. And people recognize that. So I don't know. If, yeah, I guess you're right. It's not necessarily the most tantalizing and exciting of your developments, but just from how it will affect consumer electronics, it's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, that's fair.
So,
that's cool, man.
It's very cool. So,
Not at CES, but Microsoft did come out with a new phone this week. Did you
yeah.
see? It's the new
Is it awesome?
Nokia phone. Get this. Mm. It costs $25,
$29.
It can go a month without being recharged.
That's pretty cool. Is that 25, yeah. 29 after subsidy or 29 period?
Before taxes and subsidies.
Before taxes and subsidies, which means you have to pay tax on top of it, but you do not have to pay. But if they subsidize it, obviously it'll be free.
Yeah, pretty much.
Holy cow.
And it's running on top of something. It's designed for developing markets. Yeah, yeah. It doesn't really say what the first smartphone launched under some brand. That doesn't say what operating system it's actually running, which is kind of lame.
Well, whatever. It's not, I mean, it's some proprietary single device specific thing.
Yeah. It comes with Facebook, Messenger, Twitter, Bing search, MSN weather, and an Opera mini browser. So there you go. Also has an FM radio and an MP3 player.
Nice. And 8 megabits of storage on the device. Wow. But it can be expanded up to 32 with a SIM card or with a memory card.
SD,
but
yeah.
8 is not anyway. Much.
But yeah, but I mean, you're like, whatever. If you're spending $29.
Yeah, buy 4.
Yeah, well, you can get a 32 gigabyte SIM card or SD card pretty easily.
Right.
It's not a big deal. But I thought it was interesting. Price points are very good. Battery life, amazing.
Yeah, that's cool. That's very cool.
Yeah.
Nice job, Microsoft / Nokia, for, you know.
Yeah.
It's important. It's an important market. So, speaking of super high-end MP3 players, Sapono is kind of made his big debut this year at CES, actually, because it was the first time that a lot of people were able to hear it and actually listen to the music, because it was on Kickstarter earlier this year. There's a lot of testimonials about how beautiful it is, but the high-definition audio device that doesn't mess with your compression at all, it was like everybody was listening to it. They had it on stage. But Sony sat there and went, we can do that too. So Sony is bringing out their latest edition of the Walkman with 128 gigs of storage, tons of audio formats that it can play, and including your completely uncompressed, beautiful sounding giant. What's the word I'm talking about? It's the 192 kilohertz, 24-bit. No, that's the MP3. That's not the exciting one. So I was going to say that sounds small. I can't remember what the codec is. But the big thing here is that it's just this super crazy good audio player, and it barely costs more than an iPhone 6 Plus, which is nice of them.
You really gotta like your music if that's the case.
I know, especially when the Pono is like $300. I don't actually get what their deal is. I get that it's probably got more storage, and I think the whole point is that it's a Walkman. It's a portable device player, but like a grand, like for a portable device player, I don't get it. the whole thing with Pono is the argument there is that, well, yeah, you're going to have to plug it in, and like it's not super portable, but you need a really nice sound system to tell the difference. You don't want to be playing this on, Beats headphones. You want to be playing this on, or even Bose headphones. You want to be playing this on your, $2,000 sound system, which I guess maybe that's their whole argument, is you're supposed to be playing this on your super expensive sound system, so who cares if it's another super expensive component of your super expensive sound system? But really? Like, I don't know. It's cool. I mean, I want one, but once again, it's low on my list of things that I would buy if I had an unbelievable amount of money from.
When you gotta understand what they're gonna do is, they're showing off the best of the best here. This will be their top one, their top tier. Then they'll have two others that go underneath it, and those will be the ones that they'll actually sell a lot of, and this will be your grounding one. Where it's like, man, you could spend $1,000 for this. Or, for only $250, you could get just a regular player.
Right. And it doesn't do as many audio codecs. It doesn't have a full color LCD, but it has 64 gigs of music storage. And, I see what you're saying. Good call. So Razer, I think, actually had the most exciting. I didn't even put an Oculus article on here. That's how unexciting Oculus' debut was this year. Everybody basically came to Oculus and said, hey, so are we going to have a consumer hardware this year? And Oculus said, well, we think somebody will come out with something. Yeah, but what about you? Well,
nice.
We'll see.
Yeah, see, I told you, dude. I told you. I called that.
Yeah, nothing you did. It drives me nuts. I hate it. I hate it because everybody who uses it says it's the greatest thing ever. But they refuse to get their act together and actually make some hardware.
Now they got the Benjamins, they can just work away in their labs. No time pressure.
Except
for all these other ones who are releasing products.
Yeah, so Razer, who's to make really cool mouses and keyboards and other hardware stuff, evidently, they're actually getting pretty into it, diversifying the hardware they make. They're becoming a more exciting company. I have a good feeling about them over the next 5 years. But one of the things that they've debuted at CES was the open source virtual reality, or OSVR, headset. Basically, they said, we think this whole VR thing is going to be big, and we kind of agree with Oculus that it's got to be there's going to be a lot of participation and people getting together and building something awesome. So we designed one and we're telling everybody else how to make it. And whether it's being able to, you know, the plastic that actually houses everything, the different screens, all sorts of different stuff that they've gotten together to build. And they're just saying, yeah, use it. It's awesome. And one of the things that one of the complaints is that the screen is a rather low resolution, but their argument is it's an open source development kit. Get a better screen. Like, that's the whole point. Somebody else do it. But one of the things, I guess, one of the innovations that they actually did bring to it, which was pretty awesome, was rather than using one set of lenses, Razer is employing one set of concave and one set of convex. The effect is solid, and the edge distortion, the edge of your vision appearing blurry while in VR, is nearly non-existent. That is by far the most positive thing I can say about my experience with OSVR's test prototype, and it's one element that feels like an innovation in VR technology. The two demos were boring, and they didn't allow depth tracking, which is what the Crystal Cove, it's sort of that, it's one piece of the whole parallaxing effect. And it's something that the Crystal Cove Oculus helmet does and does beautifully, and everybody's very excited about. But once again, Razer was like, well, then build it. It's an open source device, which is an interesting argument to be making, but looks cool.
Another reason for us to go.
Exactly. So Sony also has some cool virtual augmented reality stuff going on. They've got a strap-on for glasses. We've been talking about this. You know, what's the future of heads-up display? Doesn't appear to be what Google thought it was 2 years ago, but it obviously still has a place of some sort. And Sony's trying to build the hardware for you. They've got this cool device. It straps on. It's no secret that Sony has been working on a sort of Google Glass analogy. But the fact that the companies also got a bolt-on display that can ideally turn any pair of glasses into a savvy wearable is nothing short of impressive. This thing looks cool. But the whole idea of it is that it can work with many different types of glasses, whether it's, you know, something that a surgeon is wearing, sports gear, cool sunglasses, stuff along those lines. Pretty similar in principle to Google Glass. It's got a little OLED screen that has a prism that allows you to see through it, it's bright, vivid, and crisp. It also has a camera on, stuff like that. But just cool to see that continued drum of heads up display in the future of it. And, you know,
it actually more companies bad either in the pictures.
Yeah, no, it does look pretty cool. And if you're doing sports stuff, man, I think there's a huge market there. I really do. And I think sports and, you know, emergency response, first responders and healthcare, stuff like that. Like, there's definitely, there's something there. And once the hardware gets, you know, there and you get a couple of niche cases, I think you'll see it grow more and more and more. And then you got one.
So there's a huge leak on 9to5 Mac on Apple's next computer.
Ooh.
Pretty cool. They think it's going to be the MacBook Air. What do they call it? The Stealth, I believe. Super skinny, super small. It's actually 12 inches, so it's in between the 11 and 13.
Okay.
The keyboard goes all the way to the edge. They claim that the screen will also do that. This thing is supposed to be like super thin, just like two ports. That's it. A USB 3.0 on each side. Done.
Nice.
And the USB type C thing can also act as your power. And it's like so close to being an iPad without being an iPad.
Which I think is the point.
Yeah, there's a part of me that's like, you know, we've been talking about this idea of the iPad Pro. Kind of like, dude, this could be it right here. and we don't even know it.
That's kind of been my sense, I guess. Maybe I haven't done a good job of articulating that, but I just with the iPad Airs, it doesn't feel like you need the Mac or an iPad Pro. You know, maybe somebody smarter than me has done market research and they say, no, there is a space for it and we can make a bunch of money. But, you know, this thing is tiny. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, if it proves to be true.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see what operating system it's running to. I mean, clearly the screen is not going to be a touch screen. But that would be pretty fascinating if it... Oh, dude, if they did that, like, there it is. Done.
Yeah, and the big thing about this is they...
Go ahead.
I say the images that they're showing, the screen is a 12-inch screen, but it's the size of the 11-inch cam. So it's a smaller bezel is how they're pulling off the bigger display.
Yeah, and I was reading, like, if this is indeed the next MacBook, they're like, it'll probably be the last MacBook. Kind of like the last iPod.
Yeah.
Because, like, from then on, it will no longer be, you know, be a convertible or something different. Like, because they've kind of reduced it down to what it is. You know, they'll also, you know, they'll have spec boosts and all that kind of stuff, but from a design standpoint, this could be it.
I believe it.
We'll see. We got a lot of time before that sucker gets revealed, at least until March.
Right. Exactly. I like how we just can't even help ourselves. Apple doesn't make an announcement. They don't even show up to CES, and we still have to talk about the rumors. So, my preference in health trackers. They had a huge announcement this week, which is very cool. Two new health trackers that they're definitely are not smartwatches.
Are you jealous? You want one?
Hey, I have a secret. They're smartwatches, especially the Surge. I do actually want one. I do want one really bad. The Fitbit Surge. They got two different ones. They've got the Flex HR, I think is what it's called, which is Flexer. So they had the Flex, and it's kind of like their cool, super cool wrist version one. HR. Yeah, and but this one, all of a sudden I'm echoing like crazy.
All right, I'll fix it.
I appreciate that. The Flex, they've added heart rate monitoring, which is very nice of them. That's basically the Charge HR. There we go. They've added that to it, which is nice. But they also came up with a larger device that has a full-blown watch face and continuous heart rate monitoring and stuff along those lines. The watch's large LCD face is customizable and can display caller ID, text alerts, and media playback. It's $250, and it's sort of in line with your bigger smartwatches. But the CEO says it's definitely not a smartwatch.
Gotcha.
And I don't know, it looks really cool. To me, you know what the biggest thing about the Surge is? It's got a 7-day battery.
Nice.
Yeah, that's pretty compelling.
How long does your battery last for?
On this guy? It's like 6 days, which is okay. Cool. But compared to the Apple Watch, which you'll have to charge every day, 7 days is pretty compelling. And $200 less and continuous heart rate monitoring. I kind of hate the fact that I really want one, like really bad. It's pretty much like over Fitbit, and they might have them. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but I feel like I might have just got pulled back a little bit.
Wow.
It's worth considering is all I'm saying. So it looks like a pretty compelling device. I think what's hilarious though, and I keep bringing it up because they made such a big deal about it. But they were adamant about the fact that this is not a smartwatch. And because everybody basically, you know, part of the whole drama has been Apple kicked them out of the Apple stores. And it has to do with they wouldn't team up on the whole health kit thing because they had their smartwatch coming out and they didn't want, they want people to be stuck with them. You know, they don't want to make their data easily transportable. And Apple said, well, then you can't sell in our store. Oh yeah, and by the way, we're coming out with a direct competitor. And the CEO has basically come out and said, we are not a competitor. We're not competing with Apple, and we think there's plenty of space for both of us, and we have different types of customers and everything. But this kind of goes back to what we talked about. Why, you know, when we called the iPod Touch a mobile gaming device, the reason why you could do that, and PlayStation and Nintendo like adamantly said, no, we are a different market. And you said, you just can't say that though, because if as a kid you got $300 for a mobile gaming platform and you spend it on an iPod Touch because it does mobile gaming and everything else instead of a PlayStation Vita, you are inherently competing with them. Like, and it's to do the same thing. That's like the crazy part about it. And, you know, Apple's has a sports tracker coming out for $100 more, made out of aluminum. It's going to work great with your iPhone and all your different apps and everything. And I just kind of sit there and I go, the battery life's going to be a big deal. It's going to be their biggest selling point, and it seems compelling. But I don't know, man. I think you're trying to convince us of something that just ain't true. You are going to be competing with Apple, and it's not going to be fun for you. I do not believe.
I don't know. You yourself said it's a fairly compelling product.
Yeah, but I'm not going to get one. I'm going to get an Apple Watch.
Well, that's because you're a massive fanboy like I am.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, I get the feeling that when both come out, you're going to sit there and go, there's more use cases for the Apple Watch. And
fair enough. Totally agree.
And for $100 more, I'll
what's going to be, iPad versus Kindle? Kindle's a better reading device.
Yeah.
But you're going to get the iPad.
Exactly. And I honestly think I'm going to hold on to my Fitbit for a long time. I'm not going to stop using it just because I've got the Apple Watch, but I'm not going to buy a new device. It's not going to happen. So along with Razer sort of showing their prowess as doing more than mice and keyboards, this week they also announced a cool new smart TV that they're calling a video game platform. So this thing is like a direct competitor with Android TV or the Amazon Fire TV. It's designed specifically for being able to run games and stuff. It's got some pretty cool features like being able to support four players up to the same time. It's got 16 gigs of onboard storage. Costs $100. It works with a bunch of different peripherals.
Did you say $100?
Yes.
That's reasonable.
Quite. It's like the same price. It's the price point that everybody's going for, right? It's $99. It's a Bluetooth-based gaming controller designed by the same people at the company that built Razer's Xbox controller. To tighten the link with the PC gaming, Razer has the turret keyboard and mouse on magnetized pad here. And the most notable feature are the lightweight and thin aspect of the keyboard. That's not the section I thought I was looking at. But big thing here is that, yeah, they're trying to get into this whole gaming stuff. It sounds like they're going to do a pretty good job of it. It actually won the People's Choice for the best product at CES. But I predicted this year was going to be the year of like your smart TV little boxes of the pucks. And it's shaping up to that, which is making me feel good as Razer's getting into the foray and trying to change the conversation in their direction. At this point, Amazon might be, for my HDMI 2 slot, Amazon is sort of winning my allure right now, because I may or may not have signed up for.
Did you?
I did.
Oh man! Well, it was a matter of time.
So there was a convergence. Number one, I purchased a health not a health but a workout tool for stretching and stuff. As I run more, my body's taking a pounding, and I got to get serious about stretching and
stretching is critically important.
Yeah, and so I got one of those roller things that are designed to, like, the guy who helps me train has been, like...
Roller things.
Yeah, they're basically, it's just a roller, but it, like, you get on it, and it's, like, giving yourself it allows you to give yourself a deep tissue massage.
On your back, right?
On your back, your legs, everything.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Those are cool.
They're really, and they claim that it is, from a overall muscle health, that and a little bit of stretching, you can just do wonders, and it's becoming obvious that I need to do that. So it's like the one I got is kind of ridiculously overpriced, but it's really nice and robust, and but it's like $65, but I could have it here on Tuesday if I had Amazon Prime. And I was like, it's a big purchase. And then I remembered that for Christmas I got a $50 gift card for Amazon. I was like, oh, okay, well, sort of becomes a wash for the actual thing. So I'm just getting Amazon Prime and I get it on. Okay, I'll do it. So I took the plunge.
Dude, I hate to be this way, but you can't make fun of the people who gamble in Vegas and think they're winning if you're going to use that kind of logic to justify spending.
Well, no. I mean, it was just ideally, this is what my thought is. I'm going to keep track. I actually want to do my best to keep track of how much I use Amazon over the next year and see, does this make sense? How much did I actually save? Do I use Amazon, you know, Fire TV stuff? I'll get the app. I'll check it out. You know, it's like, do I use the service? If it's a valid, it's a service that tons of people use. If I can actually justify it, then I'll justify it. Otherwise, it was me spending $100 I shouldn't have at the beginning of this year. But, you know, I have a feeling somewhere around December, I'm going to think, wow, that was really awesome to handle this 2-day delivery for cheap. Or for, you know, prepaid. Anyways, not important. So this is kind of cool. Okay. Talking about sort of staying on the path of your HDMI smart TVs. Intel announced a Windows 8.1 HDMI stick. It is exactly what it sounds like. It is it's sort of like the Chromecast. It's a stick. It's got an HDMI plug on one side. It's got a power plug on the other. And it is a Windows 8.1 capable device. You can plug it into your TVs, yeah, and all of a sudden you got HDMI, or you got Windows 8, which is very cool. I'm totally all about this sort of technology. It's not very impressive from a specs perspective. It's only got 32 gigs of onboard storage and 2 gigs of RAM, along with USB support, Wi-Fi, and Bluetooth 4.0. But it's a seems pretty, you know, if you need Windows 0.8 on your 8.1 in a tiny form factor on your TV, it's a perfect solution. You can get it with 1 gig of RAM, 8 gigs of memory version for a Linux version, priced at only $90. The Windows 8.1 is priced at $140. $150.
Their pricing worked on you.
You know, you're right. And they also said that future versions of it, they're planning it. This doesn't have it, but they plan on future versions having HDMI power, which means that you won't even have to plug power in from the back, which is super awesome, cool. And, you know, it's probably not going to sell a ton, but it will sell quite a few at least. And, yeah, it's cool. I like it.
I'm trying to think of how you would use it or why you would use it. Well, just to have a computer on your TV.
Well, honestly, I think
Skype, that would be useful.
You know, it's funny for me. I think I could almost justify having it because it's like I've got two monitors and this HDMI switch. Plug it into one of the ports on the HDMI switch and then be able to just switch to a, you know, an independent, you know, I don't know, James. It's $150 for a full-blown computer that runs 8.1, like. It basically
requires a monitor, keyboard, and mouse. Yeah.
Hey, now, those are sunk costs. You already have 8 of those. If you're anything like me.
Not wireless.
I know. It's cool. It's cool.
All right. You know, they're getting into the living room game. Okay, fair enough. Everyone else is coming out with sticks, so they might as well too.
Exactly.
I got you. So one wheel is a skateboard that has, care to guess how many wheels?
Two. Okay, one.
Two. It has one. But it uses, I don't know, a gyroscope, I'm guessing, of some sort, to keep itself up. So all you got to do is lean. Think Segway skateboard.
Yeah, that's cool.
But you actually look cooler than on a Segway because there's no handlebars for you to hang on to. But, you know, you lean left or forward, backwards, and then left, right. You know, you'll move, essentially, and it'll keep you up. And it's got a big wheel so it can go over all sorts of stuff. I mean, they literally were taking this thing on, like, on mountain trails and on sand and sidewalks, whatever. No pricing on it yet, but pretty awesome. I would look at that and went, I could get in on that. That looks pretty cool.
It does look cool. I wonder, you know, I don't think it's not using a gyroscope. It's using just, I think it's just using self-balancing. You meant a gyroscope, and how does it know if it's balanced or not? Not like a giant spinning gyroscope to actually keep it level. I get
yes.
it.
Yes. That's exactly what I meant.
Thank you.
oh, P.S., by the way, AT&T is coming to the data rollover party.
Woohoo! Finally cashing.
Yeah! I read that, which, by the way, last month we switched over to the shared data plans on AT&T.
Yeah.
Because it was the same price and we got more data and it would stop people, one of us, from every once in a while going over. Okay. So I was like, sure, what the heck, we're doing it. And you got, you know, unlimited text and phone calls, which no big deal.
I want the drama. Who's the troublemaker?
What?
Who's the troublemaker?
It just depends on a month, really.
I gotcha.
You know,
you weren't being discreet and not saying it was you. It was you. Actually is somebody.
No, there. I've only gone over once, and I knew when I was going to do it. Let's see, our mom, she gets close, like almost every single month gets close. And I would say every once in a while tips over, but like she gets the notifications and backs off. our sister used to go over every single month and then she upped her plan size. So, you know, that solved that problem. But anyways, now I got tethering too, or what's it, hot spotting.
Nice. How many, what's your bucket?
10 gigs.
That's, dude. So Timmy, our cousin Timmy, his whole like family has got on it. He goes through like 8 of their gigs every month, like watching Netflix in his car as he drives. That's, I just made
it wrong on multiple levels.
I was going to say, I just threw him so far under the bus. That's ridiculous. So just so you know, man, just so you know, give you context, to date, which my plan switched over 2 days ago. But I have used 14.73 gigs of unlimited high speed internet. That's why I'm not on AT&T anymore.
That's a very large number.
That's a huge number.
How do you do that? That's like our sister texting like 10,000 times in a month. I'm like, I can't even comprehend that number.
Next, Netflix and YouTube, man. And
oh, yeah. You just talk about Wi-Fi. Okay.
Yeah. Well, when I'm not at home, I'm not on Wi-Fi. And sometimes when I'm at home, I'm not on Wi-Fi because it's like a lot faster than my Wi-Fi. So if I can't, if you know, it's like downloading like apps and stuff. I do all my app updates over T-Mobile. So, yeah. And those are sometimes like 300 megabyte stuff. You know, it's adds up.
But, yeah, sounds like it. Dang. So and you stream all your music too, huh?
Yeah, but they don't count that against you.
Huge. Oh.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So we get a couple more articles and a couple more minutes and I'll rush
couple more.
Okay, so Kraftwerk is a butane powered fuel cell for your phone. It's pretty cool. It's got a little USB plug on one side and, you know, those butane gas fillers on the other side. And it's this little lightweight thing. It takes about 3 seconds to fill it up and then gives you hours and hours and hours and hours of power.
Huh.
And it's relatively cheap. Cool. It's like $100. It'll retail for $150. Yeah, it is cool. It's actually the sort of thing that I think I would really like, and kind of I'm going to contemplate getting one. But there have been lots of rumors about a technology just like this coming along, whether it be integrated into a phone or not. This is your first real small kind of cool looking version of it. And yeah, and it's approved for use on planes, which is surprising since it's using butane, which results in CO2 combustion. I'm just sort of surprised you can get away with that, but whatever. They're letting you, so why not? Keurig announced at CES that they're getting into the soft drink making game. And because it's Keurig, they're actually able to play with the big dogs. So Keurig soon will be able to make, or you be able to buy a Keurig that will make Dr. Pepper. And, you know, presumably more flavors, but that's the big one they announced right out the gate. So they're, you know, competing with companies like SodaStream. It's Make Yourself Beverage Wars. SodaStream doesn't have any of these cool, like, giant contracts worked out. But Keurig can play ball with Coca-Cola, so they're gonna. Pepsi, on the other hand, they're working on their own solution to the dilemma, and so probably won't have any Pepsi products anytime soon.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, Keurig's expanding their DRM protected technology to other drinkable markets, which is kind of cool. I drink their coffee machines all the time. It's ridiculous.
Must hurt going down.
MakerBot, this is actually really cool. 3D printers are still big and people are talking about them a lot, but they're sort of like TVs at this point. It's hard to really get people impressed. Well, MakerBot did do something impressive. They debuted what they call their composite materials, and their composite materials have like real materials in them. Like they have a ferrous plastic and sort of a wooden plastic, and they have an example of a 3D printed hammer that is heavier where the metal part is because it's got metal in it. It's got actual wood fibers in the plastic of the fibers, and then they print wood grain onto it, which is funny. But they said it kind of smells like wood because it's got wood, and it is sandable and it is finishable, which is huge. The metal part you can put a magnet to and it will be magnetized. They were showing off a bunch of different. That was their really, really cool example. Was we made a hammer, but they were showing off other sorts of stuff. MakerBot demonstrated the range of use with a museum style exhibit: marble busts printed with limestone plastic, wooden boats, and a fool and a skull. Interestingly, because the plastic takes on the properties of the added material, it means. You'll be able to stain, sand, and treat wood-based plastics while iron, could be magnetized. So pretty cool. It's their
wow.
Basically, their whole point with this demonstration was to say, yeah, you know, it's like this is what we're doing right now. This is the direction we're going, and we've only got further to go. We're going to keep coming up with more materials, cooler ideas. And as we move forward in all of this, the real point is to get to convince engineers and developers and designers that this is the real deal, and it's not just a it's not just for brightly colored action figures, but you'll be able to do some really serious manufacturing and prototyping and with the future of MakerBot. So,
gun makers rejoice.
Exactly. At the same time, if you really want to get creative with your printing material, they got chocolate printing, which is just kind of fun every time we want to see one of these. The Coco Jet lets you print delicious 3D chocolate.
Is that what they call it, the Coco Jet?
Yeah, exactly. The 3D system.
That's so awesome.
I know. The 3D systems and the Hershey Company are basically making your wildest confectionery dreams come true with the Coco Jet. And you can use dark milk or light chocolate for your creation, though we all know that white chocolate isn't. Yeah, it's chocolate. Back off.
Is it really chocolate?
And so long as your desired shape isn't too complicated, the Coco Jet should be able to spit it out. You can even print functioning chocolate nuts and bolts if you really want. Sadly, press release states that the company intends to share its commercial plans for the for this class of chocolate 3D printers at a later date. So they're just showing off their cool little toy, but I could definitely see this be, you know, in hotels and restaurants and, you know, bakeries and stuff, and it's fun. That's what it is, James. It's fun.
That does look fun.
And as we come into the home stretch,
you know, also fun, I'll build off top of that.
Go for it.
And, you know, that idea of you can do it at home is also potentially coming to the beer market, to the beer market with Pico Brew.
Nice.
It's this machine that essentially automates homemade beer brewing. And so you literally, like, it's like a bread machine for beer. kind of how I look at it. You dump all your ingredients in, tell it what kind it is, hit the go button, and it just takes care of it for you. It does the mashing, which could take about 3 hours, and then followed by days or weeks of fermenting, depending on your recipe. And it's like constantly talking to the cloud to make sure that everything's right, kind of like what you were talking about with the meat earlier. You know, it's like, is everything good? Okay, everything's good. Keep it going. And so you can try all sorts of recipes for it. Pretty cool. This thing is not cheap. To get it with a keg is $1,800. Without it is $1,700. But you can make your own beer at home easily.
I'm not sure if this is like the greatest thing that's ever happened or the worst. Because it's like, what about the artistry of it? What about like the process of making it? It's sort of like automated like grape smashers for wine. It just sort of takes away, you know, part of the allure. You're supposed to do it with your feet, man. Get dirty. I will say though, if you're serious about like figuring out how to brew as a prototyping tool, that's huge, man. You can really precisely, you know, define what are my ingredients, how long do I want to brew for? You can set all those parameters. Get serious about prototyping. And that's why it costs $1,800 is because it's designed for your sort of mid-range breweries. I would have guessed, you know, they're hoping to sell it to like, not necessarily a company like BJ's Brew House, but somewhere, you know, your sort of local breweries that every town USA has at least one, and allows them to prototype beers and relatively quickly and painlessly figure out the recipe as they, you know, create seasonal beers and stuff, especially now that that's such a big thing. And it doesn't feel like it's designed for you and me, but it's definitely cool. And once again, that is,
if I had more than one beer a month, I would consider it.
Right? Yeah. It's an expensive beer at that rate though. So for me, I would say this is higher on my list than the Sony Walkman, but it is lower on my list than, probably, what's a good example of
chocolate printing tool?
No. The Razer's. No, we'll go with the HP's cool monitor thing. In my dream of what's the coolest thing that I want to buy, you know.
Fair enough.
Basically, and I will say this. So this is my last comment of CES. So Engadget did their Best of CES 2015 winners. They had a bunch of categories. We covered all of the really cool ones except for the tablets and the TV screens because those are boring, and the computers. But they're except with the exception of the best offbeat product, which is a smart belt that tightens and loosens as you like sit down and stand up and keeps you comfortable, which is hilarious. I still want myself tying Nikes. It's 2015. Let's get on it.
They're made, but it was just a limited run.
They're actually making they've already announced that they're going to do like a real consumer production run this year. And they're going to be, yeah, they're going to be like wicked expensive, and I'm going to really want one really bad.
You said this year?
Yeah.
Because I'm going to have to buy new shoes in like a month or two. All right, all right. Interesting. Yeah,
keep it in mind. Keep it in mind.
I will most definitely keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That covers our CES coverage, James. Managed to do this one within the allocated 2 hours.
Wow.
The last 2 weeks, I know.
I like it. Cool, man. It was a good week. Next week, we'll be back to boring, regular tech news. That will be exciting when we say it.
Exactly.
Cool. Very cool. Well, CES is in the can, so yeah, moving on. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We really do appreciate it. We appreciate all of you listening. So don't forget to check out our show notes at furloughbros.com. That's where you'll see all the links from all the stories that we shared, so you can see the specific ones that you cared about. I'll even make sure to include that iCelsius up at the top there, so you can check out that wireless barbecue thermometer piece. It shall be cool. So with that, let's see here. I am James Furlow, and my brother... that is a consumer of electronics.
There we go.
Yep. That guy is Matthew Furlow. And oh my gosh. I totally got to switch the sound up. Sorry, man.
It's all right.
Here we go. All right. I think we're good now. All right. So on that note, we will talk next time. Thank you.